All right. Whew. Oh my
What's
gosh.
Up, everyone?
Oh my gosh.
John is tired.
Oh, so. I'm still tired. Still tired. What's up, Thursday Warriors? And I do mean Warriors because I saw a bunch of you at the con.
Yeah.
So this is our first one back from the show. We do have some guests. I'm going to let Tim introduce them real quick, and then they already know we're going to talk about the con a little bit to kind of review that a little bit, and then we'll kick into you guys a little bit more. So you guys are more than welcome to ask questions about the show and whatnot and everything and oohs and ahs at things that we're going to show. So,
okay.
But go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, so we have Chris Anderson. Thank you for coming back. Chris was on last year sometime. We talked about Chaotic Neutral, which was just looked fantastic. And they have a new project, him and Dave Acampo. Is that how you say it?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. They have a new project coming out, and it's called Spectral. It just launched on Kickstarter. I think it's already like 30% funded or close to.
Yeah.
In like what, a day? So
2 days. Two days.
Nice.
So that. Yeah, so that's fantastic. So they're here today to hang out with us and talk about projects. And Dave gets to go through the ritual and do the origin story. So
I get the hazing.
The hazing. So we're glad to have you guys here. Really excited.
Yeah.
Glad to be back.
I'm not streaking. Not again. But
I mean, we don't know for sure if you're wearing pants right now, but we don't know for sure if I am either. So it's okay.
Exactly. That's the world we live in now. Pants
and
optional.
Chris is our
optional.
First two-time returning guest, huh?
Ooh.
At least recently. Yeah.
Yeah.
Since I've been on.
Yeah. I don't think we've had anyone else since you've been on that was a double hitter.
Yeah.
Actually, we haven't had a lot of repeats at all. Like, I think Sean Gabrin and Todd and Ron might have been the only Ron friends.
Yeah.
Might have been the only
Todd
ones.
Doesn't count because he owns the store. And
yeah,
he just does
the weekly drive by, drink by.
Yeah.
I don't, whatever. So, all right. So let's talk about the con real quick, get it out of the way, and do a little review for these guys so they can hear about how awesome it was. Firstly, I want to thank everybody again for coming out. It was a huge success, in my opinion. People were coming in the door till at least an hour before close both nights. all the comic vendors told me they did amazing. A lot of the artists told me they did great. There weren't a lot of people that told me they didn't, which is good feedback. At least I hope they were not lying to me. I'd rather them be honest to me, and most of them know that. So. Overall, I've mostly heard good things, so I'm excited about it. We have a couple of weeks before we're going to start planning the next one. So please just hold off on being even more excited about the next one. But I promise you, it will be. We'll raise that bar just another click. Howard Chaykin and Rick Leonardi and Maria Wolf were all awesome, awesome guests. Along with everybody else, but those were three of the bigger ones that we brought in. Daryl Banks too. It was awesome.
Yep.
Like Ron Friends, Brett Breeding, Pat Olive, Dave Wachter, Matt Horak. Ron Friends gave me a hug at the end of the show, and I've never had Ron come up and give me a hug, but that was very cool. Joe Linsner, Christina and Joe were there. That was great too. So I'm just going to show off a couple little things that I got that were cool. We do a charity auction, and we raised, I want to say it was like $2,000 for the Extra Life, through Extra Life for the Children's Miracle Network. Specifically, it goes to the Pittsburgh Children's Hospital through that. It was awesome. This is my Kermit the Frog picture. I said, I'll give $50 to anybody who does a Throg. And he was already doing Kermit, and he just changed it. And he went, here you go. And I was like, all right. this is number 5 of 50 poster, but it's signed by the three guys who did it. So Justin Birch did the lettering on top. Howard Bender, who's been a guest on the show. Actually, him and Justin both have been guests on the show. Howard drew this, and then Andrew Harmon colored it. And I just saw today that IDW got the rights for more Ghostbusters. So I imagine Andrew's going to color more of those because he's an awesome colorist and cool. Does a lot of Ghostbuster stuff. And this thing, this actually made me cry a little bit. So the last 3 years, I've been really trying to get the show to this very specific location. You know, I had to deal with COVID. I had to deal with my boss not really wanting to go for it, but still eventually going for it. Then COVID happening and then me having to go through all of that again to have them say yes to do it. And a lot of people had the idea of, well, all these other shows went down there and they didn't get bigger. They died. And it was worse. Well, I could tell you right now, our attendance was up from what it was when we were in the mall shows. DJ Sci-Fi and Christina Deke Linsner spearheaded this project, but they tell me it is from everyone, and I do think so. So they had a poster made that said "Thank you, John," and literally had every single artist in Artist Alley and creator do this. I can kind of do this kind of thing. But there's like a Spidey head sketch from Ron Friends, a Spidey head sketch from Rick Leonardi. The Eye is Sora. The Dawn is Joe Linsner. There's a little Green Lantern that's Daryl Banks. I mean, it's crazy. The Wolf is Maria Wolf. This was so nuts that I just could not. I just was so blown away by it. Like Dan Mendoza did a big Zombie Tramp quick sketch. Like this was super cool. And I guess I almost like watched people work on it like 3 times. And they had to be like, nothing to see here. You need to walk away. And I'm like, okay, I'm too busy to give a shit. I'm just going to walk away. You know, it was awesome. The staff did great. Tim was on the staff for one of the days. He had really the he had the excellent opportunity to pick up Rick Leonardi at the airport,
which was
kind of cool.
Probably one of the best conversations I ever had because we talked about a project with Ron Mars to destroy the Marvel Universe.
Oh wow!
He's like. I said to him, I said, Ron, I said, we got to think about this for a second, okay? Because, you know, if you use something like the ultimate nullifier, it's only going to travel as fast as the speed of light, right? So the destruction is only going to travel that fast. So, you know, there's going to be parts of the universe that can figure out how to stop this. And I'm like, wow, this is what super nerds think about.
Like, way beyond. Now you know what kind of the weird conversation I had with George Perez was when I got to pick him up from the airport once. That was real crazy. He just talked to me about sirens the whole time. But it was an amazing weekend. It was 2 days. Saturday night, the beer release went well. However, Howard Chaykin did not sign any of the beer labels. And if you guys don't know, he is a recovering alcoholic. He's been sober for 30 years. So I don't blame the dude for not doing it. It was pretty funny though. Cause right after that, I came back from dinner from that and I walk in the hotel lobby and there he is sitting there talking to Ed Pisker and Roland Mann. So it was kind of like, all right, I'm just going to sit down and talk. And they're fucking talking about ice cream and custard. Like, and I'm just like what kind of conversation did I come into?
Hey, comic creators have to eat too, you know?
Right. But the Spider-Verse panel where we had every guy that had worked on a Spider-Man book in one panel was awesome. The Howard Chaykin Q&A was great. It was a lot of fun. There was I got a lot of compliments from both guests and vendors and attendees and even the convention center said like we were one of the easiest people to work with, because I was so prepared going in that it was like I'm a little bit anal about this. It is kind of my baby. But I think one of the best compliments I got, weirdly, was from a dude on our staff, who I had never worked with on our staff. His name's Ray. He's super cool. Ray Colson. And he said that he has worked at like probably 15 other conventions in the area. And he's like, this was the best experience I ever had. There was no drama. Everybody was good. You guys communicated. Things ran smoothly. And I just want to, you know, thank him again for that. That was great. And then I want to thank Scott Smith and Justin Comp for being super awesome and being my other two blue shirts. We do a Star Trek theme. So like the guy who owns it, my boss, he wore the Captain Gold shirt. And then I had the blue Commander shirt and they had blue Lieutenant shirts. And then everybody else was a red shirt crewman. So, nice. You know, so you're disposable. Not really. They're not disposable.
I'm thinking about my shirt choice for this podcast and thinking there's something I'm in trouble, you guys.
Are there phaser right burns on it? Because then you got a problem. But no, really, like Scott ran the front end pretty damn well, and Justin ran the floor so that I didn't have to, like, while I was answering questions and doing stuff, like they held their own really well, and I'm really proud of those guys. And everybody on the staff. So Tim, thank you again as well for being on that staff. That was awesome. And I hope you had fun with that too.
I did.
Cool. Yeah. I had a buddy who drove in from Columbus and just to work on the staff. He's like, just give me a hotel room and you don't have to pay me. And I'm like, fuck yeah. He was there Saturday and Sunday, and he was like, that was one of the most awesome experiences I've ever had in my life. And all he did was take tickets most of the day. I recently last year brought him into the convention world. Like we went out to a show in Dayton that we're friends with, and he had a blast. So, and I got some crazier stories for later. We'll get into that. Yeah. Tim already knows one of them. At least you know the first half of it. I don't know if you know the second half of me calling the hotel to complain about things. it was good. Thanks everybody again for coming out. It was really, really great. We'll see what we can do about next year. All right, let's dive in. So take it away, guys.
I guess we got to do Dave's intro, but Chris, if you have any updates on Chaotic Neutral that you want to talk about, we could do that real quick, and then we can jump into Dave's origin, and then from there, you guys can talk about the new project together.
Yeah, sure. Chaotic Neutral is coming along. Mark got real sick for a while, so it sort of slowed things down a bit, but we're playtesting the module part of it right now. We're almost done. It's a lot more exciting and complex than I thought it was going to be. I thought this was going to be a quick little sit down, play for half an hour, you go into a dungeon and you either die or you get the treasure, but it is not that at all. It's like way more expansive than I thought it was going to be, which is awesome. It's really, really cool. And you're going to get your money's worth. Just everybody, please thank you for your patience for us getting it out. The artwork has been done for like 5 years. that part's done and ready to go. It's just, we want to make sure that we get this module right and that you don't start playing it and then all of a sudden get to the end, spend, 3 days with your friends playing this game and you're like, wait a minute, it's broken. We can't finish the game. So we're real close. And then once we're done with that, we're printing in the States. So the turnaround time to be able to get those books is going to be pretty quick. So we're really close, really close.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm excited to have it in my hands.
So. Me too.
Definitely.
I mean, I played a little bit of D&D with Mark and Chris, and Mark doesn't half-ass anything. So I guarantee that he is putting his all into that, being just a great game, great experience.
And I remember a gigantic goat with his wiener hanging out, getting it chopped off. So if that's any indication, I'm ready to go.
It does, and then it allows you to take it wherever you want it to go, so it can get even crazier if you want.
Oh, nice. Nice. So, okay, so everybody knows Chris. We know your story. Dave is the newcomer. We usually do a thing called origin story, just whatever you want to tell us about yourself. You can go back to, and then I saw the light. As I came out. You can go as far back as
you want.
It's
like came out of the womb. I decided,
I want back in. Let me back in.
So, tell us whatever you want about yourself, how you got to this point.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'll focus on the comics, obviously, side of things. So I'll skip birth. But, you know, I mean,
I've from always... like womb to immediate spinner rack. That's what we're saying.
I'm going to start with spinner rack. Okay. I'm going to skip over the womb. Okay. We'll start with spinner racks. But that was my, you know, comic book origin in terms of comics were, you know, probably as much of how I learned to read as you know, anything else. They were plentiful on the newsstands. And, you know, I was like a Marvel kid. And I just thought that comics were amazing. I don't know that I really distinguished the different forms of storytelling. Like you go from a book to a movie to a comic. And I don't know if I ever had any difference, but I loved that, you know, every month there'd be something coming out. Although at that point, when I was a kid, you never really, you guys probably know this, like you didn't read every issue. You got whatever what you could get. And, you know, a lot of those books were set up so that, you know, it could kind of fill you in. But I think I just was fascinated because it always felt like there was a lot of backstory, right? And then I think for me, when I was kind of the end of high school was when one of the big tentpole, and I talked about this recently because there's a Netflix show coming out, but The Sandman was a book that I was kind of out of comics. Then it was like, whoa, wait, what is this? And that is the book that made me want to write comics. You know, that's the book reading those short stories, Dream Country, the first volume of short stories, definitely play into Spectral, the Kickstarter that we're doing right now. Which is in many ways a love letter to that, but just seeing what he could do with short thematically linked short stories. And so I always wanted to do comics, but I didn't write comics for a number of years after that. I ended up writing I ended up going to school for creative writing, thinking I would write short stories and poetry, ended up in Los Angeles where I would eventually meet Chris, but first through a mutual friend, I started writing screenplays, which we did a couple short films. And then I, from there said, you know, I'm really tired of having to wait to light a set for like 3 hours for like 10 seconds of video of like the woman runs down the hallway. And, you know, you like, you know, there's so much in that. And at the time podcasts were fairly new. And so I thought, well, what if we go back, go old school and do an audio drama? We have lots of great actors in LA that we work with. And so we created something called Wormwood, which was an audio drama that started in 2007. And that really got me to do to me, that was a love letter to like a few things that I loved, you know, dark fantasy, like The Sandman, Twin Peaks, which was a television show that I adored. And also the long form continuity soap opera of like the X-Men. Right. So I could do all that in an audio drama. And then out of that, we actually had an artist approach us that said, you know, I've been listening to your show and I really want to draw it. And he had drawn some pages like adapted, and Jeremy, the co-creator, and I were like, well, we need to do like a prequel to that. We need to do something that's original to comics, not an adaptation of the show. And we put together like a short comic pitch with Jared Souza, the artist. And we took it to San Diego Comic-Con. And, you know, they'll tell you, you can't go to San Diego Comic-Con and pitch a book and get it. So, but, you know, for every time someone tells you there's a rule, you know, someone breaks it. So we actually lined up with Hermes Press, who mostly did sort of these library compilations of like old Phantom comic strips and stuff, and Buck Rogers and stuff like that. In fact, Howard Chaykin was there with the year we launched our book. We sat in the booth with him.
Fun fact for you. Hermes Press's main office is north of Pittsburgh.
We got along great with them, and they actually were looking to stretch into original content. I think they would end up doing a book with Buck Rogers book with Howard Chaykin right after that. But with us, they took a chance on, you know, a couple of nobodies with a book they thought was cool. I think we got through three issues of it before the sales weren't good enough. And we went fully digital for the remaining two issues of it. But that kind of put us on the path. Then I ended up teaming up with Chris, and we put out our first book, Lost Angels, in kind of a similar fashion. We found an up-and-coming publisher who wanted to put stuff out digitally and then run a Kickstarter for the print campaign. And so, you know, I had kind of pitched Chris my Lost Angels idea, and he came on board, and we put together a mini comic, sent it around a bunch of places, and ended up lining up with Comiker Press, and just kind of went from there. And after that, I guess the next big kind of tentpole thing for me was getting into the DC Writers, the Talent Development Workshop. I was in the second workshop, the first one that was kind of open to the public where you applied and everything. And so I was in that one. So I got to do like the Scott Snyder, I don't remember how long it was, like 13-week, you know, writer's workshop. And that was a lot of fun. It ended up, I got to write a short story for DC for their new talent showcase. But in the midst of all of that, Chris and I kept working together. We were putting out volume 2 of Lost Angels digitally. And we kind of came up with this idea that we'd take these one-shot, we'd create these one-shot horror stories that Chris is showcasing right now. And this was really kind of came out of us being at conventions and really kind of seeing what people were into, seeing that people liked original art, and Chris could sell these pages. And I'm like, I want to do a story where you can sell every page, you know, like, and so I really tried to write like a short story. And I was coming off the heels of like 13 weeks of writing, like, or thinking about superheroes and big epic, you know, structured comics. And I wanted to do like just a down and dirty, you know, little spooky horror story. And so Chris drew it. And that sort of paved the way for One Shot Horror, which, you know, we continued on, and now we're at the point where we put them all together and are kickstarting it. So yeah, thanks. That kind of brings me up to the present.
Okay. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Well, we know Lost Angels. We carry that at the store.
Nice.
We've bought some of those. So Chris was nice enough to do some sketches inside. So I think most of them sold out. So at least at the Waterfront location.
Nice.
So, yeah, I think we ordered what, like 12 or 20 or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, I think there's only like two or three left. So
hey, nice. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Five at most. Five at most.
So, yeah, I'll have to touch base with you guys. And I have another graphic novel that came out in between all those called The Margins, which I didn't work on with Chris, but with this amazing artist, Amanda Donahue. It was her first comics work. She has an animation background. And so me and my buddy, Paul Montgomery, we wrote this, and it was published by Fanbase Press. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but it's a book I'm really proud of, but it doesn't get enough exposure. I need to get it out there more. So, but it's a really good graphic novel.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome.
So the new project, you guys want to, whoever wants to talk, but if you want to tell us about the new Kickstarter that launched 2 days ago.
Yeah. You want me to take this one, Dave?
Yeah. I've been talking. Okay.
So, so Spectral, A Showcase of Fear, follows a character named Professor Spectral and his magical mystery puppet wagon around town to tell stories to the kiddies to delight and terrify you. So like Dave said, it started off with us doing these short 12-page stories, and each one of them, you know, we started with Devil's Skin, and it had just a spot of red color in it. So we said, well, hey, that was a lot of fun. Let's do another one. So we created Witch Heart with just a spot of green in it. We said, well, let's work our way all the way through the spectrum. So next came Wolf Moon. And then we decided to do something a little different. We released an Instagram story version of a book called Dollhouse, which we ended up printing a few of the smaller books. If you go to Dollhouse Comics on Instagram, you can actually read the whole thing right now. And then we went to Blue, we did Afterlife, and Purple, we did Deep Thirst. And so we wanted to collect them, but in order to collect them, we had to kind of come up with a story to go through. And we wanted to do something in the vein of you know, the EC horror stories or Creepshow, which you guys know I worked on.
Yeah.
So I wanted to like keep the momentum going with that, draw in the fans that we brought in from Creepshow too. And it just so happened that a friend of mine that I went to, well, I didn't actually go to school with him, but I knew him in high school. We worked together in high school. His name is Andy Jensen. He, this puppet right here, he built this puppet, Skeletor puppet. And nice. He owns a company called Son of Jen Puppets. And he started making puppets based off of our one-shot horror stories. And so when we were trying to figure out how to connect the stories together and make it into this cohesive book, we were just kind of like, well, Dave was like, well, why don't we make it a puppeteer that tells these stories? Yeah. And so Professor Spectral was born. And so he'll be weaving these yarns together in the full story. And that's kind of basically what the book is about. And then you get into the like the rewards for the Kickstarter. And Dave, if you want to talk about that a little bit.
I have some of these. Yeah. Are these the puppets that you're...
Yes.
Yeah, that's the creep. That's the creep from Dollhouse. Yep.
And that's the wolf from Wolf Moon. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, these are great.
There's the devil skin.
Chris is absolutely right that like, We knew that we had printed four of the books on and we just printed those on our own to take to shows. We just knew that people responded to them well. People, you know, at cons, you know, there are a lot of people that want to get, you know, the signature of somebody or, you know, they're find, you know, old books or whatever, but there's definitely a contingent. There's a place at a lot of good shows for people who are really interested in something new. And so we found that like the Devil Skin and the Witch Heart, I mean, he showed you the covers and they're very kind of iconic and they kind of catch your eyes. And then Chris's art sells it basically. So it's sort of this 1-2 punch. And we've done very well at shows with those. But I knew that when we kind of brought them together and always thought, well, look, we're publishing these ourselves. Kickstarter should be the way we bring this all together. But we knew that we wanted to add, I knew that I didn't want to just have it be a collection of the individual books that we've already printed. I knew that I wanted to make it really special. Like if you buy this book, you're going to get something that you don't get from buying those individuals. And that's where the idea of the framing story came in. And it just so happened that Chris was like, yeah, my friend Andy asked if we could make these puppets. Aren't these awesome? And I'm like, oh, and I started picturing like this, you know, really strange, creepy puppeteer, you know, with like a little like kids puppet theater wagon that opens up, but there's something really sinister about him. And I was thinking a little of like the Japanese manga artist Junji Ito and kind of the way he might do something. And so we kind of just are like, yeah, let's honor those puppets and bring them into the story. And then, so it just seems really self-fulfilling, like really prophecy fulfilling in a way that like we take his puppets, we turn them into, he bases them off Chris's designs. We take his puppets and bring them back into the story. And then we put it all out as a Kickstarter where his puppets become a reward, you know, that you can get. And those four that you guys showed, the wolf, the creep, the witch, and the devil are one of a kind Muppet style puppets. And then we also have some lower tier like glove puppets. They're a little more simple to me. They look like little South Park characters, but like better, like they're, we have that like sort of flat, but they look so cool. And so that's another tier. And then, you know, other than that, I think we've got the range covered of what you guys would expect to find in a Kickstarter, digital, tiers. If you don't want to deal with the printing and the shipping and all of that, we've got, an enamel pin of Professor Spectral based on Chris's art that we're producing for it. And that's really cool looking. And then we've of course got original art, and a lot of Chris's pages have been put up. For some great pages. There's one of the two soldiers on the battlefield in Wolf Moon, like fighting, and there's all, it's crazy. It's crazy good. I'm surprised it hasn't gone yet. It might be gone by the time anyone sees this, but you know, it just some great, just great pieces of art that would look great on a wall. Am I missing anything, Chris? I think that's the most of this stuff, right?
No, and then Tim, you helped me figure out how we should price our retailer tier. So.
Oh, that's a big one.
Yep.
Yeah, the retailer tier,
Thanks for your help on that.
I did the best I could.
Hey, you did great. We've already sold a couple of them, so.
Nice. Yeah, we had Marvin, who's watching, just backed it. I backed that earlier. And
thanks, Ron, Marvin.
Ron backed it earlier, too, he told me today. So
nice.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, thanks, gents.
Yeah, we love you guys. So.
I think we're both really proud of these stories. They're fun. little spooky tales, you know, and they're short, but they're concise. And I think, you know, they capture a lot of that mood. So if you're a fan of those, like Chris said, the old EC comics, Tales from the Crypt, things like that, I think we really tried to evoke that.
Yeah.
And then one of the cool things too that ended up happening, so I'd like to say that like this thing told us what it wanted to be.
Yeah.
You know, it has a life of its own. It's an entity unto itself, this project. And because we started kind of slowly working on it, I started working on it 5 years ago with Devil Skin. My style has changed a ton. And not only has my style changed, I was purposefully trying to do new things with telling these stories. So each story kind of has a different look and feel and tone to them. So it's almost like six different cartoonists referenced the style of one cartoonist. You know what I mean? Yeah. So yeah. It's definitely all me, but it's all kind of different too. So that was kind of a neat thing about it. So it is like a true anthology where you'd have different like directors and stuff like that, you know, making the project, but you know, you've got one writer and one artist on the whole thing.
Cohesive. And you know, Chris mentioned it earlier, but Dollhouse started as an Instagram comic. It began that way because it was at the beginning of the pandemic and there were no cons. There were no shows to go to. And we were like, this is why we make these books. We make them for shows. So what do we do? And Chris was like, can we do one as an Instagram? And I'm like, okay, I'll do that. But that means I want to create it where everything is a square panel, like for Instagram. And then I want to figure out how those assemble onto a page. And so we figured out a way to take. So if you go and read the comic, the Dollhouse comic on Instagram, you get it sort of panel at a time, right?
Yeah.
Here in putting it into the book, it's six panels per page. And I added the extra touch of giving it those little tabs, like in an old photo album. So the pages are in the photo album. And if you, as you go through it, this like orange stain creeps up the page. So that's an example of me trying to like, look, Chris, you're giving me a challenge. Can I do an Instagram comic? And then me sort of throwing it back going, okay, but it has to be done this way. And we give ourselves this sort of dual challenge and then see what we can create out of it. And sometimes, you know, giving yourself restrictions or challenges like that really sparks the creativity. So Dollhouse just kind of erupted out of that. And it was really fun to write. And I assume to draw, Chris, but you know.
Oh yeah.
For you.
Yeah, I drew every single page was like, you know, a square out of an 9x12 piece of Bristol. So every panel I was drawn large. So that story itself is a stack like this big, you know?
Oh, wow. Have you guys ever done like the webtoon style? Cause it sounds sort of like that where it's like a constant scroll.
Storyline. Yeah. The infinite scroll. No, we've never done anything like that. Okay. I kind of got the idea to do the Instagram one off of Simon Hanselman's Crisis Zone that he was doing at the time, which was just like, you know, he was kicking it out for free. And I knew that at the end of this thing, when they collected into a book, it was going to sell like hotcakes because everybody was following it. And it was just like disgustingly hilarious. And so I was like, well, maybe we could try it just with a single issue and have its own you know, handle and see how that goes. And people seem to love it. So
I would certainly like to try the Infinite Scroll, but it's kind of does my brain in a little bit. It's hard for me to think of that. I kind of want everything to be flowing in that direction. Like, oh man, what was it? I saw that, you know, Marvel has those, what do they call them? Infinite Comics? Yeah. Or whatever it is, but they do a couple of these supplemental series. And one was like Hickman and Declan Shalvey, I think. Yep. And it's like Wolverine falling from a satellite in space or something like that.
Fantastic.
The whole thing just goes down. And I don't know. I was reading it going like, this is amazing. I don't know how to think through this story, like as a writer. So again, per that thing of like giving yourself a challenge, I probably will end up having to do this at some point and dragging Chris along with me. I haven't tried one of those yet, but I'm intrigued by that. I think, you know, the more pushing comics, I mean, I'm, you know, he and I were doing this trade paperback on for a reason. We love the printed packaged product. But at the same time, like, I think when you can move into other media, like go onto a screen and be able to open yourself to new options, there's just a lot to do there. And it's really fun. So I like that a lot.
There's definitely a way to mess it up. Cause I, I have a subscription to that, and I read Declan's and Hickman's. Jordan Blum did Spider Bots, and then there was a Shang-Chi one, and those were really good, the way that they kind of utilized the page going straight down. But I've read some pretty bad ones too, so there's definitely
they tried to rework, I know, the JRJR and Gaiman Eternals, right?
Yeah,
that way. Yeah. And because it wasn't originally that way, it just didn't work.
Yeah, they're doing it with a few of like the bigger series. Like there's the Lemire Moon Knight run. I think they were doing that way, and it just doesn't come off the same way.
No, because it wasn't planned that way from the get-go. So it's hard to
plan it that
reverse
way,
engineer it. Yeah, you absolutely have to plan it that way. And we, you know, Dave and I, the way that we work is we don't ever want to keep repeating the same thing all the time. We're always trying to grow, always trying to improve and do something different. So I'm sure, if not the next thing, the next thing after that will be something in that vein, you know.
That's awesome.
We'll see.
Well, I don't know, John, do you have any questions about the project or anything?
No, it sounds freaking awesome, though. I went and backed it as a retailer while you guys were talking. Awesome. So
nice.
Just so you guys know. Thank you, John. Yeah. So, and Tim, that was pretty good of a price, just so you know.
Thank you.
To keep your job, rock and roll.
I've learned something in the last 6 years. Yay.
So yeah, that was it looked awesome. Like I was like, oh, I kind of want one of those puppets though.
Right.
But I was like, nah, I'll just get the books in the store. It'll be fine. I'd rather help you guys out than get the puppet.
Well, you know, you can always add it on afterwards, right?
Yeah.
Hey man, if you happen to have one at Heroes Con in a couple weeks when I see you, I may or may not have cash for it. Just saying.
Don't think I'll have them on me. Andy's got them all. But we can make it. We can probably figure out a way to make it happen. If you really want it to happen, I think we can make it happen.
I feel like this is almost like the story of the Ugly Dolls. Like, do you remember the Ugly Dolls?
Yes.
Like, do you know how they were created?
No. Like,
so this couple was living, like, they were... One was like at art school and one was somewhere in a job, like on opposite ends of the country. And the one that wasn't in art school would write handwritten letters to their significant other on the other side of the country, but would draw these really terrible figures and be like, oh, I love you, blah, blah, blah. Here's this figure. And he would try to like make a collection of these dudes. And that the one at art school, on the other side of the country, would then actually make them into a stuffed animal. So when the other one came, and then would mail it back to the other one. So he had like this collection of all these dolls. And when they finally got married and were living together, someone saw them and was like, what the hell are these? Told them the story, thought they were cute as hell. And they just mass produced them. So it almost kind of sounds like that kind of thing where it's like, here are these puppets.
Yeah.
We're going to work them into a story and vice versa.
It's so true.
You know what? I've got this weird feeling the way that this book has gone so far, like I said, telling us where it's going to go. It's probably going to tell us something like, Andy's going to blow up and Son of Gen puppets and the spectral dolls will become the next craze. We'll see.
I don't know, man. Then you got to move on to like action figures. I mean, you could do the puppets at the booth though. They do well.
Okay.
I know one of our avid guests and listeners, Marvin Nguyen, was at our convention this year, last weekend at Comicsburg, and he had action figures of the guys from The Edge, I believe. I don't know how well they sold, but I meant to go by there a bunch of times and check them out, and I was too busy. But
you know, if nothing else, it draws people in. I know that.
Yeah. And it's just kind of like, what is this thing I don't own? Yeah.
Right.
And
right.
Yeah. So definitely cool. I definitely think you should try to get a couple for the your booth and just kind of have them up there. Just make sure they don't walk away, of course.
Well, hopefully they're sold by then.
Yeah. That's also fair. Yeah.
And the thing is like, if you go in and back it and get one of the puppets now, then you guarantee that you will have one of the originals. So if this does turn into a Cabbage Patch kind of thing, you probably want to get on this thing and get it now.
I mean, because I can see like little plush key rings.
Yeah.
Like,
what's that?
Yeah. I could see like the little plush key rings. Like that would be sweet.
Yeah.
That'll be
you guys gotta too. You gotta market this shit, guys. Yeah. Come on.
Coming. Let's get over the hump first and then we'll blow this.
Yeah,
thing
exactly. There it is go. So funny the way it's all been the way it's all developed though, because yeah, it started off with like, yeah, just us wanting to create a little short story that we could sell at shows.
Yeah.
And we put all of our art and design and writing into it. And then now we're at a point where someone's making puppets for us based on those characters. I mean, that's wild.
Yeah. I think that's the thing that, you know, I hear a lot of people like, if I want to read something that's different from superheroes that, you know, and that has a lot of creativity, they go to indie books, because indie books, you know, especially if it's like it through Image or something like that, it's all creator owned. They get to do what they want and they enjoy what they're doing. But then you take it a step further and you do it on Kickstarter and you get all these little cool things
that
you don't get just from just buying, say, an Image book. Exactly. And I think that's what makes Kickstarter a lot of fun, is seeing these packages that people come up with and the creativity that goes into that, because I think it all flows from like the creativity of the book and the energy that you put into it. Cause like, oh man, what if we did this? Or what if there was this?
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
I think that's the thing I like about, you know, backing things on Kickstarter and sharing those things. Cause it's just that oozing passion.
So. We got a lot of cool things planned too for stretch goals once we get past that point. So if we can blow this thing up, if everybody listening goes out and get the puppet or original art right now, we can blow this thing out of the water and start getting you even crazier stuff. So
yes,
yeah,
but we want to keep that under the table for now. So.
I definitely have the same feeling though. I love both Chris and I back a lot of Kickstarters, and that's the exact reason is that it feels a little more like, you're getting this sort of personal, real passion project. And I can 100% say for us, it is a passion project. Like this, every page of this book. So Chris does all the art. I write the stories, but I also design the packaging of the book because I'm a graphic designer as well. And so like this thing has been designed and drawn and written within an inch of its life. You know, it's just, we poured over every page, and it just made sense for us to take it to Kickstarter and then to think of all the things that you mentioned, like, okay, what if we do an enamel pin? And Chris sends me a picture of the shot of Professor Spectral, and I send it to the design people, and you know, they come back with a proof and we're like, oh my god, that's amazing. And now we have a book and pin tier, you know, and Andy's puppets. I mean, it just, it's those cool little add-ons that you can't that you don't always get just through, you know, standard means. And I think that just adds something to it.
Yeah.
Now, awesome. I know Chris is always busy. I don't know if he ever sleeps.
Not lately.
But Dave, do you have other things like it, you know, in your head that you're down the road, I really had this idea and I really want to work on that? Or is everything kind of still just focused on Spectral right now?
Well, we always have stuff in the works for sure. You know, I don't know if Chris has mentioned it when he was on here before, but he and I have like 3-4 pitches that are like developed pitches that we have out there. You know, so we're always kind of trying to think of new comics to do. Right now, I don't have anything I can really talk about. I wrote a novel with comics, with any sort of creative endeavor, you have your ups and downs. And when the pandemic hit, it kind of came at a point when I kind of was between projects and stuff dried up a little bit. And so while I've done various things over the years, I think more in the last couple of years, this Spectral has been a thing that's kept me going. That, and then like writing a fantasy novel that I've had in my head for years. They actually originally started as a comics pitch that Chris drew a few pages of. And then I was later like, you know what? I think I need to write this. And he graciously let me. So I'm looking for a home for that right now. Right now, everything is focused on this Kickstarter campaign, but I have already started filing away. I want to do volume 2 of Spectral. Here are the various creatures that we haven't touched on yet. And so my brain is working overtime thinking about, I would like to continue. In fact, Professor Spectral, this mysterious puppeteer character, we don't get a lot of him in this because he's sort of the framing. He's a little bit more involved in the story than like a Crypt Keeper kind of guy, but at the end, there's this sort of notion that he could play a much bigger role. And so I'm already getting ideas for that. So yeah, I'm always coming up with stuff. And Chris and I think what we're really hoping, just, you know, for anyone out there, is that if the Kickstarter has become a very viable way for independent creators to just really put that whole package together and get it out there. And I can tell you right now that if Spectral is a success, I guarantee, if not a volume two of Spectral right away, one of our other pitches may just go right into the works as like the next book that we produce. Assuming Chris can make time for it, we got to work it in, but we have talked about just continuing this and, you know, putting out books that way, because there's no shortage of ideas and stories that we've developed.
That's awesome.
Have you guys, cause I know like some indie publishers like Aftershock, Sourcepoint, a lot of those guys do, like, they just do a Kickstarter to launch the book and they would do that kind of stuff too. Have you guys pitched to any of those, or are you trying to steer away from that just because like you want to take your time and do it your way versus like feeling like a crunch of a deadline to get something like that out? I'm just curious, as someone who doesn't know that end very well. I would just, you know, I'm just always curious about that.
Well, we're always open to talking to publishers, you know, all the time. But what were you going to say, Dave?
Oh yeah, no, I was going to say that. I was going to say it's a little bit of everything in that. You know, we're definitely very open and to publishers and talking with publishers. I think one of the things that you and I had discussed, you know, and I feel always guilty about this as the writer, is that, you know, I want to try to get Chris a page rate. So we talk to publishers that we think can offer a page rate or something, or, you know, like, you know, image, if we know we own all of it and get, you know, a healthy chunk of it and get the exposure, it might be worth it as well. So, but it is a calculation that goes on in our heads. It's kind of like, okay, if I'm, you know, if we're going to publisher X, Y, or Z, you know, what can they do for us? Is it a good fit? Is it worth it? Or is it something, cause we, you know, we've worked with smaller publishers and, you know, where we don't get a page rate or don't get money up front or whatever it is. And that can be tough on the artist and it slows down the whole process. So if we could use Kickstarter to bypass some of that, because, you know, I love all the various publishers. You mentioned a lot of really great ones, and there's others that we talk to and have friendly relationships with. But sometimes it's like, oh, we just put out another book like that. Or, like I literally got one that was, and this is not a bad thing at all. It's just like, oh, we're doing no more space related books right now. You know, and that's fine. They had a glut of them or whatever it was, and they don't want to do anymore. And so I've got this space opera book that I'm dying to do with Chris that we created a great pitch for, that is sort of political and timely, and I'm very passionate about it, but, you know, like, I want to find the right place for it. And it's not just like wherever it's sort of like, you know, finding the right fit and being able to have that dialogue with a publisher and, you know, just get it to go.
Yeah, that's cool. I just didn't know if it was more like, you know, obviously not being a creator myself, I don't know, but I've definitely hung out with enough editors and stuff like that, that most of them look for two issues in the can, third one being done, and like a decent timeline of when that series would be completed. So I didn't, you know, but I've also know people that just said, you know, I'm going to do my own thing, screw everybody else, because I want to do it at my own pace. So I just didn't know if it was one or the other, but I also never thought of asking, you know, are you just looking for the one that's the right fit, which, you know, sounds like you are. And that's super awesome. You know, and I hope you guys find it at some point, but, you know, because everything I've seen sample wise has been killer. Yeah. So.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh,
and that's, you know, but that's also why the Kickstarter is, so that we don't wait for, you know, the right fit. We make it ourselves, you know, and that goes back to that whole thing of why Kickstarter for this one, as Chris has said several times, it's like this project told us what it wanted to be. And it started off as, hey, we can print these little 12 pagers ourselves for a reasonable price and they do well. Well, okay, let's just take that to the next level and put it all on Kickstarter and do it ourselves. Cause we have the skills between us to get it all the way done. I mean, obviously we have to send it to a printer. We can't, we're not running the presses ourselves, but, but everything else.
All good. Handling. I mean, I know publishers who their first couple books, they literally bought printers, like multiple printers, and put them in a room in their house and then hand stapled them all together and folded them and then sold them. And it was the craziest thing I'd ever heard of, with like how easy it is to just get something mass printed right now. It's like, really? Like that's nuts. But I guess like when you're talking about like the late 90s, early 2000s, when
it's a different time.
Yeah, like a color jet was not exactly a cheap come by right there, you know. So if it was black and white, you might be okay, but you know, nobody wants a dot matrix, like, you know, you'll rip the sides down on the little lines. That'd have been hilarious.
That would be great. That would be that's a great idea to print a book like that now, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, and especially if you did it in like what DC's doing with Black Label, that bigger, like almost magazine size.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And do it and just like, you know, the pages on the inside have the dots.
You'd have to pick it up. Like, yeah, you'd have to pick it up as a scroll.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like accordion style. Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be freaking awesome.
Don't give us that challenge. Okay, much, Chris, though. We have to tell a vertical accordion folding story.
Yeah, but if you read it too much, eventually the papers would just separate. So
I mean, but Chris probably has a story like this too, but like the first comic I ever made was in high school, hand drawing it on computer paper like that, like tearing the edges off and then like drawing it and then handing it around in class page by page. I think I had 80 pages of a book called Psycho Ninja. That was the first, like, that was my first comic. That's how you do it, right?
I bring Psycho Ninja back. I'm it now.
I know. There you go. I still have friends from high school that will every once in a while, well, are you ever going to do anything with that?
Let me know. I'll put it by my my Fat Ninja collection, which is there a legitimate comic that has been printed.
This thing is selling itself, Dave.
All right.
I have to move challenge it up on the accepted. List.
Next Kickstarter.
Oh,
and
man.
Anybody that's watching too that wasn't here when Chris was on the last time, you have your Patreon also. So
I do. I have my Patreon as well. Yes. I'm kicking out a lot of process stuff on that right now. So you're seeing a lot of stuff that I can't talk about, and I'm not supposed to be showing. But you know, there's a paywall, so they don't know.
Yeah,
right. It's like OnlyFans, right? There's definitely a paywall.
So many jokes that I could say, but I'm just gonna keep it to myself.
I was like, the same. Yep, I was like,
I just thought it was funny that when OnlyFans started, it actually was for like more like the Patreon style thing.
Yeah,
and then it like totally took a left turn. It like blew up. But hey, whatever.
Twitch is going to turn into soon, I think.
Ooh, yeah. You're not wrong.
Everybody just playing video games in a bikini.
I mean, it's in the name, isn't it? Twitch?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. I guess so.
I mean, if it was called Cringe, it would be a little better.
Yeah. So,
yeah. That's what we're going to do, Tim. Like, we're going to have to do the 4th of July special where we're wearing bikini tops and playing volleyball virtually. It'll be
most
geez.
We can get online and play through our PlayStation. We can play something. That'd be funny.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds better than me in a bikini top.
Oh no, you still gotta do it.
You still have to do that.
Yeah. Come on, man. If I do it, you do it.
Be a team player.
This is high school all over again.
It'll be fine. It'll just be funny to watch us do a Twitch. That'd be really. We actually have a Twitch channel. We just don't use it at all. So,
yeah.
But we could totally do that. That'd be really funny. Go on there and play something really weird. So, but
well,
anyway,
I put the link down in the chat. I will post this up on our Facebook and Twitter page, and hopefully, in a week's time. If not less, you'll be fully funded. So
that'd be amazing.
Yeah, that'd be so awesome. Great. That'd be so great. Yeah, we're a quarter of the way there, and I feel pretty good about that. A quarter of the way there in a couple of days is a good sign. We were trending on, I don't know, one of those things that we were going to make like, you know, almost $80,000. And I was like, Dave, we're gonna have to work for the rest of the year off of this baby. Like that. But the reality is it's probably going to come down to the wire, but you know.
Yeah, I'll take that's it the nature way. Of Kickstarter.
I'll take it either way.
Hey, every little bit counts, and little by little we're ticking up, you know, and it's great to see that. It's fantastic to see the support we've already had.
Yeah.
Here's a random question. On the other side of Kickstarter, what is the coolest Kickstarter reward you've gotten personally from backing something?
Oh, that's a really good question. Yeah.
Just one each. Dang. One each. I don't need the plethora unless you bought like a bunch of dolls, but you know.
Oh my gosh. Don't do this to me.
I know. I'm trying to think right here.
Or one of the coolest. It doesn't need to be the actual coolest, but like, what's the first one that comes to mind when you think about that?
Dave, you go first.
Yeah. The one that's immediately popping to mind is, this is a few years back now, Greg Rucka and Rick, is it Burkett? Did this book Lady Saber. I think it was a digital thing first or online.
Yep.
The resulting package out of that I got in the mail was really great. I mean, it was this big oversized hardcover book. And then there were all these extra ancillary pieces that, you know, stuff that Greg had to write. And there were paper dolls that came with it, just all sorts of really fun stuff. So that one jumps out of my mind of like me getting the package in the mail and going, wow, this is a really cool set of things. I think, yeah, that's me, Chris. Hopefully I bought you the time.
Yeah. I've been loving backing Jake Smith's Blood Force Trauma books. He's been putting them out one at a time. I think he's on like, what is he on? Gosh, like five issues have come out one at a time so far. But I remember back in the day, he put out his first, I think it was his first book called like Off the Beaten, something. I can't remember what it was called, but I just remember seeing the artwork for that and being like, wow, I've never seen this guy's work before. This guy is going to be somebody. And then finding out at the time he was just like a kid and like getting really mad about it. Like, what? How's this kid so talented already? He's going to blow up. And then I can see his trajectory like taking off. So it's been a lot of fun backing that one.
That's awesome.
Sure. Have you guys read that at all? Blood Force Trauma?
I have not, but as soon as you said it, I just pulled it up to look at it, and the artwork looks amazing on it.
Dude,
so
it's awesome.
I think someone else recommended that to me. It might have been over the weekend at the convention, but that sounds real familiar. So
yeah, he's gonna be in that modern pantheon of like Daniel Warren Johnson, James Herron kind of thing. I think he's like right on the cusp of hitting his stride with his style and everything like that.
Yeah,
he colors it too, and the colors are bonkers.
I can see what you're saying with that, with the style and the colors really awesome. Vibrant and bright and just
watch out
by the way your cool one. Your spectral backing is now at 25% due to one of our listeners.
What? Nice.
Yep.
Sweet. Chris, nice. What was that one? Was it Jim Rugg? What was the with the black light?
Oh, Octobriana. Oh.
Octobriana. Yeah. That was another cool package that I got in the mail. Yeah, I thought that was a really
John
cool
John got me
Kickstarter.
A copy of that as a thank you and got it signed.
Nice.
That was
Jim,
small
Jim lives around here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That was another probably Kickstarter I really liked.
Actually, I think he's still in Ireland. I was like, I'll probably see him Monday or Sunday because I'll be at our Pittsburgh Mill store and he shops there a lot on the weekends. But then I remembered he's in Ireland and that's why he didn't do our convention. Sad panda. But Jim and Ed and those and Tom, like all the cartoonist kayfabe guys are freaking awesome dudes. They're definitely like a very specific kind of humor too. they're very much so that like if you're like 38 to 47, you're probably going to hit that right and be friends with those guys.
agreed
Well, I really appreciate you guys coming back on. It was really fun talking to you guys about
thanks
this
for having
project
us.
So
you know I did a lot of podcasts for Chaotic Neutral, but I have to say that you guys were my favorite one and you guys still are.
Thank you.
You know, I think we got some lasting friendships going on here in the comic community. And I
yeah, absolutely.
Really appreciate you having us back on.
No, anytime. We're not the biggest podcast. We're trying. We've recently branded ourselves Pittsburgh's most mediocre podcast. I think we're kind of embracing
something about knowing your lane.
The most mediocre comic podcast. Mediocre comic podcast.
There you go.
The Venn diagram just got much smaller.
I think we have the best guests though, and that's really the thing.
I mean, you double dipped on me, so you must be hurting.
I'm pretty sure at this point I can get Howard Chaykin to come on if I want. So
that would be great. You should get him.
Yeah. Yeah. Chick,
man.
He's already with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's invited me to hang out and grab dinner on at Baltimore, one of the nights of Baltimore. So, I think it's because he and I are very no filter kind of people. But it was cool. But you guys are guests on here, and you are in the same, like, we've had like Daniel Warren Johnson, like we've had, you know, Ron Frenz on here. Like, you guys are in with that creme de la creme, and everybody is awesome. We've never actually, I don't think, ever had a bad guest.
No, that's awesome. I was joking. I hope everybody out there YouTube land knows that.
Yeah, obviously. It's good. No. Actually, it was kind of funny because like last week, like I saw Tim in the morning and I'm like, dude, we can't podcast today. I'm so exhausted.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, just remember Chris is coming on next week. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna remember. And then like Sunday at the show, he's like, I see him, which was his birthday, by the way, and happy birthday again.
Happy birthday.
And I said, and he was like, don't forget Chris is coming on Thursday. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like yesterday, text, don't forget Chris is coming on Thursday. I'm like, dude, I remember. I'm not.
Well, listen, man. Listen, you just got done putting on like what sounds like an incredible con, and no easy feat. So, you know, it's probably good that Tim kept going on that, because with all of that going on, it's very possible to forget things easily. Trust me, I know.
I even told him 25 that. I
said,
Yeah. I told him, I said, I'm just going to keep telling you. I said, because I know you have a bunch on your plate. I said, so don't punch me. Like, I'm going to make sure that you know that you don't forget. So, I mean,
and it's the least I could do. So, I came close at one point, but no, just kidding. But no, I love having you guys on. Like,
thanks, man.
Yeah. Like I said, they're
probably
there's
just so excited that I was coming back on and forgot to. Oh my God, Chris is coming on. Chris is coming on.
Yay. That's like the clapping monkey.
Now, so.
It is cool though. And, you know, and it's also cool that once we do these kind of things, like when I get to see you at Heroes, it's going to be cool for me a lot. Like, Tim got to experience some of that stuff, that kind of a vibe at our show this weekend, where he got to meet Maria Wolf for the first time. And me too. Like we met Maria, who is awesome. If you haven't checked out her art, make sure you check out her art. But you know, it's those kind of things that I love doing. Where I'm like, all right, I'm going to a show. I'm going to meet this dude because I've only ever seen him through Zoom or I've talked to him on the phone. Like to me, it brings it to a whole different level, because now we already kind of know each other. So it's not like super, super awkward.
You know? Yeah. That's one of the best things about cons, man. That's why I missed them so much when they went away. I mean, writers and artists, you know, on our side, like it's a solitary existence. You got to be at a keyboard or at, you know, at your drafting table, you know, so much of the time. And then, you know, we can meet people online and have people that we admire, or friends even that we don't see that often. And then, you know, actually getting to meet and hang out with them at shows is sort of one of the great things for me about cons. You know, that's always been like the really fun part for me, as big as San Diego Comic-Con gets, and it's too big, but I can avoid the media circus and I can go have drinks with some good friends that I'd only get to see, you know, once a year. And I love that.
Absolutely. I had something and I totally lost it. I was like, I was like, holy shit, my phone just blew up. And I was like, gonna check these later. But the only thing that I noticed on there that I need to tell Tim is, dude, For All Mankind started again today.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
All right. I know what I'm doing. So, if you guys have never watched that, it's on. It's an Apple Plus original. It's basically a twist on the space race where the Russians.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I haven't seen that.
And everything so just kind of like snowballs from there. Yeah. So the last season ended with people on the moon fighting with guns. Yeah.
Nice.
So thank you for the heads up.
They skip like a decade every time they do it. Like the first one was like the 70s, where like the space race, like the late 60s into the 70s, where like they actually get to the moon. Oh, and then the second one was like late 70s into the 80s. And this one, at the end of it, the outro music was Nirvana. So we're like, oh, I guess we're going to the 90s.
Nice.
So
cool, yeah. That's neat. I've been listening to the Three Body Problem while I work right now. Nice. And I guess they're making that into a Netflix series. And I have no idea how they're going to
do it.
Because it's all over the place. It's going to be nuts. Oh, I don't know how they're going to do it.
Yeah, I watched the first part of Ms. Marvel. I thought it was good.
Yeah. It was really good.
Yeah. I think we're going to talk about that more next week in like a full blown spoiler version. Yeah. So
that's the perfect way to describe it. It was very charming.
It was very charming. I thought it captured Kamala Khan's persona, even with the changes they made. Like it still felt like her.
It was the spirit. Even if they changed the details. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I also liked, I mean, it just felt very different to me. This is non-spoilers because I know you guys are going to go into it in another week. But the vibe I got out of it watching, I'm like, this is like the Gen Z version of a John Hughes movie for like the first 20 minutes. It's just all high school and the tropes and the parents don't understand you and all that. And I'm like, this is great. You know, it's a lot of that Tom Holland Spider-Man energy to it.
Yeah. Yes. Did you ever see the... Yeah, kind of. Did you ever see, what the hell was it? Easy A with Emma Stone? It kind of had that vibe to it. But she was more like the senior, where Kamala Khan feels more like maybe a sophomore at this point.
I think she's a sophomore junior, they said. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause she's like learning to drive. Like she goes and fails her driver's test. But like part of it, I was like, oh my God, this is like this felt closer to my high school years than like anything we've seen in a Spider-Man movie since
the
original Raimi ones.
With the fun addition of being able to see like hero culture in the Marvel, in the MCU, like that they would have hero cons that aren't comic, like I could see it and be like, oh, it's Comic-Con except it's with real heroes. And I
thought play. Yeah, that was interesting.
I'll tell you the one thing that I liked about it, and I won't get into anymore, is that they didn't feel this need to explain she's Muslim and there's all this and this is how this works. It was just this is what it is. Yeah. It's normal.
Yeah.
And you just take it for that and you just enjoy the story, because I felt like if they would have went that I gotta explain what's this and all this, it really would have ruined it. But you want to make it feel this is normal and this is her life. And I feel like I connected with it so much better because of that.
Yeah. So everybody can relate to like feeling like an outsider or having like the baggage of parents, and maybe the details are different, but there's a lot of cultural similarities, even, restrictive parents come in many different shapes, you know, forms and in many different cultures. And so that was something I always loved about Ms. Marvel, the comic, you know, like as I felt immediately like this is specific yet universal. And when you pull that off, I think that's where you get your sort of Spider-Man level of like character that, you know, can last for a long time. So I'm glad to see it following through into this series.
Yeah.
And The Boys season 3 kicked off.
Haven't watched it yet, but I'm caught up until now.
Holy shit. It is still amazing.
Kind of the other end of the spectrum, isn't it?
Yeah, right. I'm just excited because The Deep has returned, and I'm curious to see how they play him out a lot more. So and there are things that happened in the books that I was like waiting for them to get to that they finally got to, where the boys are actually going to be able to go toe to toe now. And,
Oh, okay.
Oh yeah. super, super good. And Homelander just becoming the absolute piece of garbage that I always want. I was like, man, he's still kind of got that I'm going to be the fake Superman vibe through the first two seasons. And this season, he's just, fuck you guys, I'm going to kill you all. And it's just it's like there's this great dialogue between him and Starlight about how she still has that video of him on the airplane that they shot down. Oh, that's right,
yeah.
Right? And him and Maeve fucked up. And he's like, go ahead, release it. I'm just going to go up and I'm just going to wipe New York off the map. And then I'm just going to go over here and I'm going to do this and I'm going to go to this and I'm going to blow this up and then I'll take out all the cell towers and then they can come at me with nukes and I'll just throw them into space. And I was just like, holy crap. Like, yes, this is Homelander. This is the guy I wanted the whole time. And this guy is perfect as Homelander. So, so yeah, go check out that, guys, too.
Yeah, don't spoil it all. We won't have anything to talk about next week.
That's true. That's true. And I'll have a whole nother episode. Or no, I won't have another episode next week. But, oh, yeah,
just
I will.
Cut this one in half, and then you can just air this next week. As
Oh, your... that's true. That's true. Oh,
yeah. Nah, I'll be on three times.
Fun. Yeah.
Actually,
you'll be on three times.
Oh, he's going for the hat trick.
I weirdly think the ones where we go like between the hour and an hour and a half like tend to have more viewing and listening. So I'm 100% okay going over a little bit, but we do have to wrap it up a little bit. I do have food on the way. So
okay. Well, that's fair. We can't that's stand important. Between, you know, a man yeah. and dinner.
Hey, man.
We could just sit here and watch you eat, I guess.
No, so that'd be weird.
So we get to the hour and a half mark.
You don't want.
I like that. You considered it for half a second. You were like, no, that wouldn't be. He's like, if I'm wearing a bikini,
there you go. I'll go see things. If my wife has a bikini top I can borrow first, and then we'll yes, be fine.
I'm ready.
We'll put this part behind the paywall, and you know,
hey man, I'm not gonna lie. At one point, I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll do a cake sitting OnlyFans. Yeah, I could probably make money doing that.
And this is the part where we wrap it up because of that comment. Right. So, yeah. So thanks, guys, for coming on. If you want to hang out after we hit stop, you can. But thank you very much. Thanks for all the Thursday Warriors for listening. And we'll see you guys next week.
Yeah, thanks.
Peace.